Numbers 25. While Israel was staying in Shittim, the men began to indulge in sexual immorality with Moabite women, who invited them to the sacrifices to their gods. The people ate and bowed down before these gods. So Israel joined in worshiping the Baal of Peor, and the Lord's anger burned against them. The Lord said to Moses, "Take all the leaders of these people, kill them, and expose them in broad daylight before the Lord, so that the Lord's fierce anger may turn away from Israel." So Moses said to Israel's judges, "Each of you must put to death those of your men who have joined in worshiping the Baal of Peor." Then the Israelite man brought to his family a Midianite woman right before the eyes of Moses and the whole assembly of Israel while they were weeping at the entrance to the tent of meeting. When Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw this, he left the assembly, took a spear in his hand, and followed the Israelite into the tent. He drove the spear through both of them, through the Israelite and into the woman's body. Then the plague against the Israelites was stopped, but those who died in the plague numbered 24,000. The Lord said to Moses, "Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, has turned my anger away from the Israelites, for he was zealous as I am for my honor among them, so that in my zeal I did not put an end to them. Therefore, tell him I am making my covenant of peace with him. He and his descendants will have a covenant of a lasting priesthood, because he was zealous for the honor of his God and made atonement for the Israelites." The name of the Midianite who was killed with the Midianite woman was Shimri, son of Salu, and leader of a Simeonite family. And the name of the Midianite woman who was put to death was Cozbi, daughter of Zur, a tribal chief of the Midianite family. The Lord said to Moses, "Treat the Midianites as enemies and kill them, because they treated you as enemies when they deceived you in the affair of Peor and their sister Cozbi, the daughter of a Midianite leader, the woman who was killed when the plague came as a result of Peor."
Okay, what do you get from the story?
Good to be Phinehas.
Well, what?
It's good to be Phinehas.
Good to be Phinehas, yes. What did Phinehas receive?
Separate covenant.
Covenant of?
The priesthood.
Shalom. Very important that he got the covenant of Shalom. He already was a priest. All right? But he received a different covenant than with the other one. So all of his family has are at peace with him. Now God is, now what does it mean to be at peace with God compared to being at peace? All's going to be well. Your family's going to be just well off. I'm not going to be upset with them. Not even if they do something I don't want them to do. I'm going to be at peace. I'm not going to go to war against them. I'm not going to punish them. I'm not going to go hard on them, even though they may go the wrong direction. You know, so here's the peace. He's not going to come against any of the descendants of this particular son of Eleazar. Okay, Eleazar was the high priest still. Yeah. So it's interesting to know that it's quite an interesting scenario when you look at it from that point of view. All right. Daniel's going to be getting into this when he gets through the book of Joshua more in detail about what took place here. I'm not going to basically go to there. Now it says, join themselves to Baal of Peor. Now remember who Peor came from? Balaam came from Peor, right? Now, interesting in research. I can't really nail it down, but where was Balaam from now?
Kind of the Euphrates River area.
Okay, yeah. That's right. Now, what we don't have is what part of the Euphrates River? Was he the north part, the middle part, or the southern part?
Yeah, because the northern part would be up in Syria.
And the southern part would be?
Down in Iraq.
All right. Now, it's very fascinating that this particular Peor there was a king by that name, and he was a king of a certain family. Now, out of guessing, who do you think he was a king of?
Moab?
Midian.
He was a descendant of Edom. I mean,
Esau.
So it's kind of interesting that kind of explains a little bit from how come Balaam understood who God was. Alright. It comes to the point of a connection there that he wasn't just a Goyim. He was actually related to Edom or Esau. And who did Esau know who God was? He knew who God was. He raised up by the same father and grandfather. So kind of gives you a little bit of background of what's going on. And so now we come into this. And it says, have joined themselves to the, what does Baal mean?
Lord.
Lord. Lord of Peor. In other words, now you're going to go and join yourself with an enemy of mine. You know, the one that Esau had began always having trouble with from the beginning, in the very beginning of their birth, in fact. Has to do with the prophecy, but I'm not going to go there today. He's now take the leaders of the people and hang the offenders before the Lord in the sun. That's on your translation there. Some of you has in the sun. It does not mean daytime. It's a Hebrew phrase, is that you will hang them in before the Lord in facing eastward toward the rising sun. It's a phrase used in Hebrew. It's quite fascinating to know. Now, why would he say face east before the Lord?
That's where Moab was. From Midian was, where Baal Peor was,
we're all these. Okay. What else is very significant about when you're facing God, you're facing what direction?
East.
Even if you're in the tabernacle, God, you're facing eastward toward the tabernacle or toward the throne of God. So in this specific system here, they said that they're before the tabernacle. Let's drop that down. Let's see. Where was that at now? This is verse 6. And indeed, one of the children of Israel came and, no, that's not it. Oh yeah, weeping at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Now, it sounds like all of Israel was weeping there at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. No, not really. Who was weeping there at the tabernacle of meeting? Who was crying?
Moses and the leaders?
Moses and the leaders were actually up there, and we were the ones that are weeping and crying because of what took place. And they went before the one place. Yes?
What took place?
This
whoredom. We'll have to keep on going. The story goes on down to the Midian women. Okay, it had to do with...
I've heard different stories of what this is saying without saying.
Well, let's see what it says first, what it says. Then we'll hear.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. He was standing there, and he said, "I want to you to meet this woman." That's what it says.
What?
One of the children of Israel came and presented to his brethren a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses. So he said, "Here's a Midianite woman," and they all saw it.
Verse 5 says what?
They went into the tent.
Say to the
judges.
The judges of Israel. Everyone of you kill this man, or kill his men who have joined Baal Peor. Now an individual, one of them, came and said, what? This is the Midianite woman I'm with. Mm-hmm. Now this specific Midianite woman is very named here for a reason. She's not an ordinary Midianite woman.
Daughter of a leader.
Daughter of the leader. He is the leadership of all of the Midianites. So he took, this guy took, which we know later, it's the son of, one of the sons of Simeon. He took in, I don't say arrogance, challenge to the judges. He took this challenge to the judge. In a sense, he dared them to kill the woman who is a daughter of the king. That's what's taking place in this story. And this is what the priest did. The priest stood up. He took a sword because he went into the tent. This man went into the tent to challenge the judges whether or not they have enough, well, they can't carry it out, because this particular woman is a very prominent woman. You have warfare going on here, people. You go to war with the Midianites if you kill this woman. That's the bottom line of this whole statement. What was taking place here was this individual, which later on in the chapter tells you his name, who he was, and tells you who the woman was and who she was.
Okay, I'm still missing something.
We're missing.
I understand who she is.
Right.
I understand who the guy is. I understand that Moses said that everybody is supposed to kill the men who are joined to Baal, who have,
right,
quote, joined themselves to Baal, whichever that means. They're bowing down to a god.
Right.
Okay? Now, it doesn't say anything about killing any women, and it said, but I don't understand chapter 6. Now,
verse 6.
Did he say, okay, I'm going to go commit whoredom with this woman, therefore, lots of luck, guys? Or did he say, I am going to marry this woman?
No.
He was basically taking the woman and they were going and having...
They were going into the tent to be together.
Correct.
It doesn't say that.
Yeah,
it does say that later on in the chapter.
It says that one javelin went through two people at once.
I got that part.
So they were together and he went through the belly of both. He went through the belly of both of them. Either he was on top of her, or she was on top of whatever, but he went right straight down through.
The defiance.
The defiance.
Was not, as I mean, the wording here, one of the children of Israel came and presented to his brethren a woman in the sight of Moses. That to me doesn't say what rest of what we're saying.
One of them went to Moses to present his...
They went into the tent. That was the issue.
Correct.
Right.
And this particular woman was a very important woman.
Not that part.
Okay.
But the tent part,
The chapter starts out with these people, with the Israelite men, going and, you know, doing more than just bowing down.
Okay, see, it didn't say that.
Well, it says right.
It does say that in the later on the chapter, because whoredom is listed there.
Yeah.
Whoredom is listed there.
Whoredom can mean bowing down to a pagan god.
No, not in this area. Technically speaking, you've got to correct in Jewish thinking. But we're not talking Jewish thinking here.
Yeah.
But we're talking about here what really took physical, what took place physically.
Yeah, because Canaanite worship practices always involved.
Always.
Like prostitutes.
Okay.
Always.
Well,
and so do the Midianites.
It also specifies the daughters of Moab.
Yeah.
That's gender specific.
Very important woman. Very important woman.
They're playing the harlot with the daughters of Moab, not the gods of Moab.
That's right.
This is more than idolatry.
This is more than right.
See, to me, I perceive it that their harlotry is involving, they're saying, come over to my gods. Not necessarily.
Yeah, but later on, the book of Joshua...
The daughters of Moab, not the daughters.
And the book of Joshua, it says specifically what they did.
It's all-inclusive.
All-inclusive.
Yeah, because that's actually one of the most powerful proselytizing methods that the Canaanites used.
Right.
Why do you think Israel went over in mass to worship the gods of Canaan? It's because it was a pretty licentious religion there.
Okay, now, why was God mad?
Because they were going after another god?
Going after another Elohim.
Yeah.
And they began to respond to... Remember, what does worship mean?
Means to show worth to...
Show worth to... You respond to that which has value.
Greater worth.
This is the reason why gold can be worshiping, not that you bow down to it and idolize to it or give sacrifices to it. You're going to do because it has a benefit for you on the other side. And so you can wind up worshiping. Person can worship the work of their hand. I'm a great lawyer. Oh, I win the battle. And he prays himself, and all he does is worship his own work. The word worship we have in relationship to religion, we have a concept that means bowing down. But that's not what it says. That's not what the ancient word of worship means. It's the state of giving honor, high honor to something. All right? Now, it could involve bowing down on one knee, both knees, as well as being prostrate completely on the floor, or standing up and giving him honor. Has no difference with God. And that is true. Now he says, I want to kill those who are joined to Baal Peor. He didn't say, I want to kill those who are joined to women. It's very interesting to know the difference. Now, there's a challenge here. And the challenge was one man decided to do something. And the obvious challenge is very obvious. He challenged Moses and the judges. And they did not know what to do. Moses didn't know what to do.
Phineas did.
Huh?
Yeah.
But Phineas did. And because of Phineas' response or action, God says, because he has done this, I'll give him a shalom. But what did he do?
Protected God's honor.
He obeyed.
He made an atonement.
Yes.
Okay? Now, atonement is an important thing. What does atonement refer to? We killed this guy and this woman. They were totally contrary to anything that God wanted them to do. And he went up and he killed them. And God says, now you have made an atonement. How did he make an atonement? He didn't sacrifice anything that was really being sacrificed, right? How could he make atonement for anything?
It said stop the plague.
Stop the plague. Okay, yes.
Well, I guess one way that I kind of look at it is you have a situation where the leaders of Israel are like paralyzed, not knowing what to do.
It would appear from that, obviously.
Yeah, because they're weeping over the situation of having ends up being 24,000 of their.
What are they going to do? They can't stop it, right?
Commissioning. So they're like, oh, what do we do? So in that situation of paralysis, you have the leadership. With a command from God and not knowing what to do with it, Phineas moves forward and says, okay, he kind of like jerks it back into gear and says, okay, now we're back into obeying what God says.
We're back in agreement with God. And since you're back in agreement with God, word atonement does not refer to necessarily a sacrifice of a clean animal or anything. Atonement has to do with, and it's a good old English word, you're now in agreement with God because now it has a covering. It's been covered. The sin has been covered. The situation has been covered. In this particular place, it had to do with a very important woman and not a very important male, but one of the headmen of Simeon. Yes.
Verse 6, and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping at the door of the tabernacle of meeting, the tent that he went into, is it the tent of the congregation of Israel?
No, not the
congregation.
His
tent.
You would not dare into there. Okay.
Oh.
Remember what it says that before all the children. Have to be careful when you use the word children. It means sons in this particular case. And it means to who? The very first part of it tells you, Moses said to the judges. Every time when God speaks, it's, I want you to speak unto the children of Israel. That means the sons of Israel, the leadership of Israel, because they weren't out a big, huge, amphitheater. Moses talked to the 12 leaders of the tribes, and those 12 leaders went out, and then they talked to their people, their families, their captains of thousands, captains of hundreds, and captains of tens. And went that process of communication went through from God to Moses to the leadership, down to the average family. All right? And that message came all the way down to this particular man, who is named here, the Simeonite, Zimri, that came down to him. Now, he's one of the more important leaders. He wasn't the leader of Simeon, but he's one of the more important leaders of a family, and it names that family the son of Salu. So he's a very important individual. He wasn't just an average guy. He was the head of a clan. He was head of a certain clan of families that within that family of Simeon. All right. So we have to, you know, when you look at this particular story, it's telling a lot of things. That's true. I don't have a problem with that. Now, when God talks about whoredom in the prophets, that's a different kind of story. Israel went and committed whoredom. That's an entirely different meaning, okay? And we'll have to break that word down later, but not today. But to understand that whoredom, when basically the word whoredom deals with any kind of adultery. Now, adultery includes any kind of sexual misconduct of any kind.
Right.
A man commits sexual sins with a man, that's still called adultery. All right? Otherwise, there's no meaning in that word of commandment. What does the word adult mean? Oh dear. Sorry, what?
I remember. I forgot.
Not a child.
Taking that which is pure and holy and polluting it. That's what the word adultery, adult means. And adult is a person who is no longer innocent. A child is innocent, right? Until a certain point in their life, they're no longer innocent. They're aware of who they are and what they are. All right? That's just an interesting word to know. It's an English word. All right? It's not a Hebrew word. It's an English word. So understand what that means. Yes?
Which helps to explain what the prophets and what Messiah meant when they keep talking about the Israel committing adultery, adulterous generation,
right,
and such.
Taking that which is pure and holy. All of Israel was married to the Holy One of Israel.
Right.
All right. And so they adulterated it by having not sexual relationship. Now, don't get this word twisted in the word, because when we think of that, we think of it in the flesh. But let's get out of the flesh for a moment. Let's get into the realm of spirit. You're beginning to pollute or bring in another spirit. Now, this is what's taking place right here. What was coming into this house of Israel, which we had just read earlier, pure and holy and good, what were they doing? Bringing in, making communications with the leadership or the Baal Peor. So you have a spiritual one as well as a physical one. We first saw the spiritual one, then the physical one took place right before their eyes. The only thing we don't know, when they had a kill, it's called a plague. It's a really poor word. The judges had to do the killing. All right? It wasn't some kind of plague coming all over them, because that's not what the commandment says, does it? The commandment says the judges are to do the killing. Now, how would you feel if you were one of the judges? Huh? How would you feel if you...
I'm a judge!
No. You have to kill some people.
Yeah.
Killing people is not a pleasant thing. It's not something that you go out and celebrate and have a champagne afterwards. Even men today, when they have to pull that, quote, electric chair in the old days, or the guy who has to put the needle into that, he doesn't have a good night's sleep. He knows he's got the authority and responsibility to it, and he'll do it, but lo and behold, it's uncomfortable. When a police officer, even today, who kills somebody who's out to kill them or out to kill somebody else, and they stop him, they kill him in place, guess what they have to do to that police officer?
Yeah.
They have to take him aside, take him away, because the drama, killing a human being is very, very hard. That's the reason why even a soldier, when he faces hand-to-hand combat, it's more difficult for him because he sees the individual he's killing.
Right.
Unlike today where we have this high-powered weapons, the plane's so high that you can't see if you tried, and it doesn't see people. He just sees, oh, there's a building. He doesn't see anybody get killed, so he has no real emotional contact with it. Here, the judges had to have emotional contact with it. You can't get out of it. And so they were what? Crying. Not necessarily with eyes. Christ don't, this is, you mean by bawling.
Right.
You mean you're, it's hurting. You're crying inside, or you're crying in pain or in agony, or even you're crying, you know, what did John the Baptist do? A voice crying in the wilderness. Now we don't think of the word he was bawling, do we?
No.
He lifted up his voice and he shouted. He told the people what was happening. So you may look at this word and don't interpret it as meaning that once these guys are as much as they're ball babies. It was a devastating thing. I don't know if there are people who love killing people. Don't get me wrong. They're just evil people. We're not talking about evil people. We're talking about the judges, the leadership of Israel. They weren't evil people. And maybe they had to kill some of their own brother.
Or son.
Or father. That's pretty darn heavy. Would you feel great if you had to kill? I feel horrible if I had to kill Daniel. I probably would do it. I'd go up, jump off the bridge, get over to myself too. No, I don't want to go do this. It'd be devastating to me. I mean, face reality. And that's what's happening here. The judges were facing a reality. That's why they were crying. Where are they crying at? Before the door of the tabernacle. They're crying before God. They're yelling out toward God. They're expressing themselves toward God. They weren't just bawling their heads off. They're facing the door. They couldn't enter it. They weren't allowed to. But they extended that door. And they can cry out to God. What were they crying out?
Mercy.
Mercy, forgiveness, compassion. But the anger of the Lord was so strong. Not the only one that had, I wouldn't say guts, but got to solve this problem. And that idiot, I use the term modern language, that idiot challenged Moses and challenged the judges, took this very important woman and went into the tent. Lo and behold, what are they going to do? Total defiance. So Philemon just said, that's it. He took out his sword and killed him. One blow through both.
Righteous.
I don't know how long that sword was, but very long. I'm sorry, what?
Righteous indignation.
Righteous indignation. Got to put an end to this. Okay? Does that kind of explain a little bit about the story? It's heavier than it looks.
Oh, yeah.
Just looks like it's, oh, God's mad. No, they didn't do it. And finally Paul solved the problem at the end of the story. But it's heavier than that. Yes.
Is it not important that blood actually was shed?
Blood was shed, and it was important that blood be shed.
Okay.
Then the, quote, plague was over with.
Killing.
The killing was over with. They could stop the execution because God says, now I am satisfied. Okay?
With a righteous action.
With a righteous action. Then mercy was granted unto the rest of Israel. All right? Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And it's to... Any more questions?
Yes.
Yes.
When you get down to 16, it says, the Lord said to Moses, treat the Midianites as your enemies and kill them.
Yeah.
Well, now, Moses' wife was Midianite and his father-in-law.
Correct.
What? How did they fit into this picture? Or where were they at this time?
Well, I would assume that she was with Moses and all the sons of Moses with him. They were with the house of Israel. A Moabite can become a part of the house of Israel if they so join. They are worshiping now the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that would be the case of Moses' wife and Moses' children.
Mm-hmm. It's probably, right? It's probably why they were somewhat cordial with the Midianites. Because they had a very close connection. I mean, they had,
right.
You know, one of Moses' father-in-law was
a priest. He was a priest.
So I mean, there was a close connection there. And then
not all Midianites were like this king. Not all Midianites were like that woman.
Yeah.
Because there were Midianites that were not like that. Not every Midianite was killed. Just of that, but she happens. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, Midian was a territory, and there were a lot of Midianite tribes.
Right, which are descendants of
Abraham.
That's why Midian, when Moses' father-in-law was a priest, because he knew who the real God was. How do you know? Mm-hmm. Through Abraham and his descendants. No, the family of Abraham was a whole lot bigger than we think. A lot bigger than we think. It's more than just the sons of Isaac and Jacob. They're a whole lot more than that. What has to do with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob has to do with the promise being sent through that son and that son on down to the following son to the time of David. And on down to, of course, the time of Christ. We're talking about a promise. The promise that God made to Abraham is different than, it wasn't a promise given to all the seeds of Abraham, but through a certain line it was going to go through. And what we have in the Bible is a line by which the promise is going to come by. The rest of Abraham's sons, there is no promise. It wasn't, not because God didn't want them, but because that's not how God works. Hey, worship one at a time. All right. Any more questions? Did that answer your question?
Uh-huh.
Okay.